in the early 2000s, I'm 25 years old, making seven figures a year. Nah, that ain't good enough. I want more.
Mr. Joe Rivera, a resilience coach.
Wall Street is also known as Drug Street. That's when my battle with substance abuse took off to the next level. I overdosed twice. It took six cans of Narcan to bring me back to life.
Wow.
I wake up, I pull the EKG electrodes off my body, leave the hospital against medical advice. The first thing that I do, I go call the dealer again to go get high. And after achieving sobriety, I was able to build another seven-figure, multi-million-dollar company in the financial industry. And even though I was crushing it and living this incredible life, something was missing.
How do we help somebody uncover their purpose? Because that is the toughest part.
One thing I always say is,
welcome to another episode of the Real Mentors Podcast. Real, as always, stands for Real Examples Altering Lives. I am your host, Sean Martin, and today's guest is a personal friend of mine, Mr. Joe Rivera. Joe's got an amazing story of some wins that were followed by some terrible lessons, and he's going to share those with us today. Now, Joe calls himself a resilience coach, and that is because he is a picture of resilience because of all the things that he's been through. Joe is somebody I've actually shared a lot of time with and broken bread with. We attempted to do this podcast a while back in my garage with terrible lighting, even worse sound. But here we are today in the studio, Hidden Gem Studio, and we're going to light it up to you today and drop some real gems. Joe, my brother, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, man. Appreciate again. Grateful to be here, brother.
Much better setting than last time, right?
This is the re-up.
Joe, tell us a little bit about your story, and we're going to get right into it. This is going to be easy for me because, you know, we know each other well, and we've broken bread quite a few times. But I want my audience to know your story before we get into the lessons and what you're doing with your life these days to help impact others.
Yeah, no doubt, man. So I went from Park Avenue to Park Bench. I was emotionally, financially, and spiritually bankrupt. I lost everything. I even almost lost my life. I had my dream job in the financial industry as a stockbroker. In the early 2000s, I'm 25 years old, making seven figures a year. I should feel like I'm on top of the world at this point. But seven figures a year? Nah, that ain't good enough. Because I live in a world with a belief system of never enough. I want more. I want eight figures or nine figures. And at this point in my life, being spiritually bankrupt, money's the only higher power that I know. I'm willing to do whatever it takes to make more money. I'm putting in late nights at the office one evening. And this dude, we call him Johnny Connect. We call him that because he had the connections to get his hands on anything you could imagine. And keep in mind, we're in New York. So this dude, you know, he swears he's part of the mafia.
Right.
He sits down at my desk and he says, "Hey, Joe, you think you're a top producer now? Take this little round pill and forget about it. You're going to produce even more." Wall Street is also known as Drug Street. And everybody's doing some kind of drug. I'm already smoking weed, drinking, or having some kind of mind-altering substance in my body every single day for the past 10 years at this point. So I said, fuck it, why not? And that's when I got introduced to opiates. And that's when my battle with substance abuse took off to the next level. My life goes dark and becomes completely unmanageable. I'm risking my life every single day. I overdosed twice. The last time, it took six cans of Narcan to bring me back to life.
Wow.
Six fucking cans of Narcan. That same night, I'm laying in the hospital bed. I wake up, I pull the EKG electrodes off my body, leave the hospital against medical advice. And then when I get outside, it's the middle of winter. I'm in a hospital gown, shivering. Looking like a crackhead, like Pookie from New Jack City. And the first thing that I do, I go call the dealer again to go get high. A week or two later, my sister invited me for an event. At this event, I don't know exactly what it was, but something clicked. I looked at my sister, she looked at me, and we both started crying. She knew exactly what I was gonna say. And then those words came out. The words my family was looking to hear for over a decade. I said, I don't wanna do this anymore, sis. I'm a shell of my true self. I was tired of writing my obituary. I wanted to begin creating my legacy again. After that, I made the decision to achieve sobriety. And after achieving sobriety, I was able to build another seven-figure, multi-million-dollar company in the financial industry. And even though I was crushing it and living this incredible life, something was missing. And God kept nudging at me and pulling at me, telling me that my journey's not complete and that I had a bigger purpose in life. And that's, you know, I was not going to argue with the man upstairs. I mean, because there was so many years after sobriety that I asked, God, how do I give this back to you? I can't give it back to you in a physical form. You don't exist physically. I can't say thank you enough times because there's not enough thank you for the gratitude that I have. And he kept telling me, go share your story. I gave you a gift. Go share that gift with the world. And that's when I said, you know what? I'm not going to be selfish because if I don't give this gift back, I'm being selfish. And that's when I decided to build my coaching and speaking platform. And man, let me tell you, there's no drug, no alcohol will ever give me that euphoric feeling that I get when I'm able to empower someone to transform their life, man. That's the gift that keeps on giving for me. That's where I was able to find my purpose again.
What a story. I mean, we were brought together through Next Level Speakers Academy, and being the only two cats from Long Island, we kind of deviated from the group when I heard you were from Long Island. I'm like, oh man, awesome. Because everybody else is from fucking South Jersey or Jersey. Yeah. That might as well be another world away with traffic in between. Yeah. And we grabbed lunch one day and we shared each other's stories and so many parallels. And sobriety was the big one for me because I had achieved sobriety maybe a year and change prior to that. I don't even know if I had celebrated a year at that point. Mm. So your story gave me hope and it gave me a bit of a blueprint. And, you know, fast forward to another one of our lunches, which, you know, we don't do often enough, but when we do, is exactly what we need. And you told me the same thing you just told our audience, which is go share your story. Mm. And I have been holding on to the fact that I went to prison because of the shame involved with it, because of the fact that I was now in this neighborhood where people at the gym, what are they going to think about me? You know, you know, my kids' parents' friends or friends' parents, what are they going to think about me? Mm. This fucking guy's a criminal. Mm. And albeit 17 years ago, this is when it happened, but I was still holding it heavy in my heart. And I wrote my book. And you clearly told me, you were like, bro, until you tell that story, God is not going to open the doors that need to be opened for you. And I'm so glad that you did, because the lunch that we did after that, I had gotten the manuscript back from my book and I had told you how I presented the question to my queen. And I asked her, I was like, babe, would you mind if I share this story? You know, I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I don't know what the fallout is going to be, but I need to share this story in order to have some real power behind my efforts now to not only build a personal brand, but to make impact. Boy, just like you said, when I decided to get up the courage to share that story, God started opening doors for me that were closed, and the red carpet has since been rolled out for me and my story and all of my efforts. So thank you, brother.
Yeah, no doubt.
I've thanked you before and I'll thank you again, because the impact that you made just in that conversation changed my life. Now you're doing that for others. What does the journey, however, to sobriety look like for you? I want to rewind back to that. So I know that it was at a Tony Robbins event. And, you know, he's someone near and dear to my heart as well. He's had a huge impact on my transformation, his teachings, not him personally, but the things that he teaches.
Yeah.
Because when we're ready, and only when we're ready, will we actually change?
Yeah.
And in that moment, I think it was at UPW, a date with Destiny, you looked at your sister and you knew you just didn't want to deal with that anymore. But I want to talk about that moment to the moment when you actually decided to get sober. And obviously staying sober is a day-to-day journey. But let's talk about that journey because I think so many people struggle with the idea that they could be better if they just were able to eliminate those vices from their life. For me, it wasn't something as dramatic as for you. Six cans of Narcan and running out in your scrubs into the fucking street to call Johnny Connect again.
That's it, bro.
That's a dramatic story. Mine was in the form of my wife telling me, hey, your breath smells like alcohol. Yeah. And I had just come to that point in my life where I knew I was a shell of myself. And getting sober has been the most powerful thing that I've done for my life, for my family, for my marriage, and for my business, for everything. And it sounds the same for you. So let's dive deep into that subject matter because I think a lot of people are curious but afraid to live a life without the thing they've become so accustomed to having in their life, which is essentially a tool to help them not have to deal with the pain.
Yeah. I mean, you hit it on the button, man. That was the fear. The fear was living a life without drugs and alcohol. I didn't know what that was, dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, I went from, you know, I was partying every day and living on that Wall Street life. I mean, I would start partying at 8, 9 in the morning and go till 10, 11 at night, and sometimes even later to the fucking birds coming out chirping. You know what I mean? But it was crazy. It was not a life to live. You know what I mean? My life was completely unmanageable, but I didn't know life without that. I didn't know what it looked like. I didn't know that there was success after that. Because in my mind, at that point, I'm thinking the drugs and alcohol are part of my success. Remember, 25 years old, 7 figures a year. I'm thinking I'm on top of the world. I got the world by the balls. I'm taking trips around the world. I'm getting the red carpet treatment everywhere I go. I didn't know life was becoming unmanageable. I didn't know things were going to go out of control. And then I lost my mom and life went dark. And when I made that decision where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, that's the moment you're talking about, because I was like, I can't live like this no more, man. I'm a shell of who I am. This is not who I am. This is not what I was made to be. And putting the drugs and alcohol down, shit, that's the easy part, bro. It's changing my mindset and peeling back the onion to take stock of who I am, doing the moral inventory and being able to look in the mirror and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the years that I lost you in your life. That's where the work is. The work is really understanding that we're not victims of our circumstances and conditions. And I had to realize I'm not a victim of my circumstances and conditions. My circumstances and conditions, that's not the problem. The people around me ain't the problem. I'm the problem. Me, I gotta make change. But I gotta wanna make that change because so many years, so many people were telling me, Joe, you gotta stop. Joe, you can't keep going the way you're going. And I'm like, I'm making 7 figures a year. Who the fuck are you to tell me what I can do and what I can't do?
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not seeing how life is becoming unmanageable besides. I'm not seeing that even though I'm making 7 figures a year, I'm falling behind on my mortgage payment. Just unmanageability.
Right.
You know, and then learning that, all right, change could happen, but change has to occur from within me. You know, I thought, oh, I can never go to a bar again where they serve alcohol and hang out.
Right.
Now I could go sit by the bar, have my water, watch a football game, and I'm chilling.
Right.
I did have to change the people that I surrounded myself with, without a doubt, because you are the company that you keep.
Right.
If you're surrounding yourself with a bunch of people that are drinking and drugging, guess what? You're going to drink and drug.
Right. You're creating an obstacle for yourself that doesn't need to be there. So it's about what you eliminate from your life in order to get to the place that you want to be. So you know you want to get sober, but how do you actually do that? You make the decision, but what are some of the tools you utilize? Did you check yourself into rehab? Did you go to AA? Did you have counseling? Did you take, you know, drugs to help you wean off? Tell me a little bit more in terms of the details on that whole journey.
So I did go to a rehab. I went to a place upstate New York, place saved my life, called St. Christopher's. And at that place, there's just something on that mountain. It's a spiritual presence that's undeniable. Because I was born and raised Catholic, man. But along the way, I completely lost my way. I didn't even know what a relationship with God was. I thought it was saying Our Father, Hail Mary, and asking for forgiveness when necessary.
Right, how convenient.
You know, yeah, right? We spoke about the Catholic. Again. We spoke about that before, right? But
we took it out of context.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
It was because through this journey and at that place, I started learning the difference between religion and spirituality, because there's a big difference. And I started realizing how to connect with my higher source that I call God. Someone else might call it the infinite intelligence, the universe, whatever they believe, right? But realizing that that higher source brought me to something greater than myself, I had to connect with in order to be able to, number one, remove these character defects, right? Number two, to be able to latch on to be able to unlock my fullest potential. I can't do it alone, bro. I tried so many times putting the drugs and alcohol down on my own. It don't work that way. Yeah. I had to connect to the higher source and then also connect to other people around me that are doing the same thing, that are sober and know how to live a sober life, right? And be able to realize not only that they're living a sober life, but to learn from their mistakes of when they had their slip-ups. Because sobriety ain't a perfect ride to the top. It ain't going to be a perfect ride. There's going to be bumps in the road. Shit's going to get fucked up. Right. You got to learn how to navigate through those times where there's bumps in the road and be able to connect with that higher source. For me, man, the key to it all was my relationship with God. Without that, right, I don't have sobriety. Without that, I don't have change in my life. Without that, I don't have nothing. Without that, I'm not sitting here right now, because without that, I'm dead, bro.
You touched on something beautiful, which is the relationship with God. And I always had a relationship with something. I was always grateful. I was always thankful. I was always introspective about the fact that I couldn't do it alone, that there was something that, you know, grace. There was some kind of grace that was guiding me through life, even in my darkest hours, being in prison or, you know, times when I was partying, you know, my ass off, or times when I got myself into trouble I'd rather not talk about. But did you have a relationship with God in some sense because you were brought up, you know, Roman Catholic, like most Puerto Ricans, like myself, yeah, you know, Puerto Rican, Dominican, you come to the States, it's just what we do. Kneel, stand, sit. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like fucking hilarious now that we look back, and that's not a knock on Roman Catholicism or religion as a whole. I just say it jokingly because we were brought there.
Yeah.
And my mother always used to say, well, we got to believe in something, right? But she wasn't a wholeheartedly invested person. She just kind of passed it down, but it was watered down.
Right,
and we were just there because we had to be there.
Yeah.
But as we got older, we strayed very far away from God, as it sounds like you did as well. But did you always have a belief? Did you always know there was something greater than yourself?
I was born and raised Catholic, like I said. And yes, absolutely, without a doubt. My aunt's going to love it when she hears this. I go to a different church and I don't go to a Catholic church. I go to a Christian church. But she's always, why did you change? Why did you change? She's going to be happy to hear that. Coming up Catholic, absolutely 1,000% helped me keep my relationship intact. I steered away from the Catholic religion for reasons that things that I didn't agree with that brought me away. And then after losing my mom, dude, I was mad at God. I'm like, dude, how? My mom's 55 years old. How do you take her away from me? You know what I mean? Why? I'm my victim role. I'm my pity pot. So I steered away from that.
Hit the nail on the head. Victim mentality. I think so many of us suffer that we need to blame somebody. And when there's nothing that we can blame for, you know, something like that, death of the person that we love the most, we're going to blame God because there's no one else to blame. The clarity that has come as a result of me getting sober was the reason that I was now able to see not only my relationship with God and spirituality so much more clearly, but my relationship with myself, my relationship with my wife and my kids, just everything. So it was a clarity shift. And I think to some extent, I'm going to go out on a limb and say the same for you, because you knew that you couldn't do this on your own, as you said. So you leaned into something that was greater than yourself. When did you start embracing your higher power? Was it almost immediately at rehab? Did it take a little while? Did it take a little practice? Did it take stepping into a Christian church? You know, how could somebody going through the same thing or the early stages of sobriety hear a story of yours and maybe hopefully let them know that they're not alone? This is something familiar. This is something other people like yourself and myself have gone through.
From the first day that I got sober, I was praying and learning how to connect, started building a relationship. Because I knew that there was a reason I was here. I knew that I survived what I survived for a reason.
Right.
Dude, six cans of Narcan?
Yeah.
I went to a place. When I took a urine sample, they told me I was pissing straight fentanyl. They couldn't take me in. I didn't know. I was shooting straight fentanyl. Six bags of fentanyl with cocaine every single day.
Go hard or go home, baby.
That's the story of my life. That's the story of my life.
We can laugh about it.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm blessed that I can laugh about it. But yeah, you know what I mean? So I'm like, damn, there's no way I survived that on my own.
No.
Because I got stories of friends that lost their lives because they went out to party or whatever it is. It happens every day.
It's in the room and you touch it and you hear the kids die in spring break. They don't even need to inhale. Yeah. It's just in the room. That's all it takes.
That's it.
And you're shooting this shit.
I'm shooting it every
day.
You're alive. I'm putting my life on the line. Before I got sober, I'm praying to God to not lose my life.
How does that conversation with yourself look like as an addict, as an alcoholic? Are you pouring that drink or opening that bag and saying, I don't want to do this, or only one hit, or, you know, what's that conversation with yourself?
I'm just thinking it can't happen to me. Crazy as it is, right? I'm thinking it's not going to happen to me. You know what I mean? But I'm like, damn, please don't let it happen to me at the same time.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So you don't got, I always say, you know, people that I know that still sniff coke, I'm like, bro, get a testing kit. The least you can fucking do.
Yeah.
Because you never know.
Yeah.
Like, you want to get high, okay. Listen, nobody to judge, but invest in the testing kit because you don't know what you're getting these days.
Yeah. Now
the
it's
dealer
just
don't know what you're getting.
Now it's bonkers.
Johnny Connect don't know what the fuck Johnny Connect is getting. He's just serving up whatever his Connect got him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to anybody out there, we're having this conversation because this is a serious fucking conversation. And I know that people out here listening are saying, you know what? I want to get sober. I wanted to get sober for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I tell it freely because I know there's somebody out there that's going to hear it and be like, oh, shit, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's another motherfucker out there that's saying, ain't going to happen to me. Please, God, don't let it happen to me.
Because
you know, inside, your gut is telling you this is not the way to go, but balls to the wall, to the wheels fall off. And
absolutely, man.
I used to pour myself a drink and tell myself, just one today. Just two and that's it. Just in the third, the fourth. And then you stop asking, you stop, you know, questioning it. And for me, it was alcohol more than anything else. Even though all kinds of drugs have been a part of my life in my 20s. I always liked uppers, never got into downers. Just wasn't my thing, unless it was weed. And then, you know, whatever. Even that now, you know, if I've smoked in recent past, it's anxiety-inducing more than anything. Because
paranoia.
I don't like being out of control. Once you have that clarity and that control, you're reluctant to let go of it because you've lived this incredible life where you can control those emotions. And I think that's another component is you're self-medicating to not deal with the emotions because you can't control them. And it takes some power and some practice, but it takes clarity over a stretch of time in order to gain that control. And by taking drugs or using alcohol, we're not giving ourselves that unadulterated, clear mind. We're fucking fogging it up.
Yeah.
So again, the power and the clarity that being sober has given me is just something that I don't ever want to live without. At this point. And you mentioned, you know, putting down the drugs and alcohol was the easy thing. For me, it was funny because my relationship with God took a little bit longer. I always had some connection with spirituality. I remember this one time I'm in Costa Rica. My wife and I are on, I think, an anniversary. And we're high up on this mountain overlooking the ocean. And she's sleeping. I don't know if we were hungover or whatever. But I remember being drunk as a skunk and just looked up and I just thanked God and I started crying just massive tears of gratitude, even in a state of being drunk off my ass. So I've always had a connection with God. But it wasn't until my sponsor at AA told me to get on my knees and pray instead of just praying that things really turned the corner for me. And fortunately for you, that happened early. And fortunate for me, staying sober wasn't as hard as some other stories that I've heard because I wanted it so badly and I did the work to maintain it. But it wasn't until I got on my knees that first time. And shout out to my sponsor, who I was at odds with. And ironically enough, you know, in those rooms in AA, I was also attending all this Tony Robbins stuff where those two things are at odds because, you know, AA will tell you that you're an alcoholic or you're a drug addict. And these are why you do these things. And it just never sat well with me that I had to start with, I'm an alcoholic. So you know, I tell the story of getting my 6 month chip and walking back, hug the lady who was hosting the meeting. She gives me my coin. I'm walking back to the back of the room where I always sit because that's always my spot, whether it was in school or is that a mastermind. My ass is always in the back of the room for some reason. And everybody's, halfway there. Sean, great job. And I get to the chair and she's like, Sean. I'm like, turn around. She's like, Sean. And I'm like, oh, yeah, my name is Sean. I'm an alcoholic. And that was the last time I ever stepped foot in AA. I say it again and again and again. AA is an amazing program. I can only hope to impact a fraction of the lives that they have in my journey of making impact. But for me, it didn't resonate because I had shifted my identity already to the point where I was like, I'm just not a drinker anymore because it doesn't serve me. How long do you have this battle? Are you able to stay sober once you come out of rehab? What is some of the aftercare you get yourself into look like?
I did AA for a while. I did outpatient for a while. And I stayed connected to a network of people who were staying sober. Do I agree with everything that AA has to offer? No. I don't believe I'm powerless. I believe as long as I have my connection with God, that powerlessness is removed. Now I have the power within me to do anything I put my mind to.
That was my biggest stumbling block, too. But I couldn't get over that first one.
And when you're doing a lot of work that we do, right, in the personal development world, you know, that powerlessness shit don't exist.
Right.
You're supposed to remove that anyway.
Right.
So it was hard for me to deal with that, you know. But I got a lot from AA.
And me as well.
In that time, you know what I mean? I got a lot from them. I think that everyone's different. Everyone's journey's going to be different. You know, my way of getting sober might not be the same way that you get sober or somebody else gets sober, right? But there's suggestions that you could follow and grab onto different suggestions to make them yours and help you get sober on your path, right? I believe that no matter what program you're doing, no matter what type of sobriety you're chasing, however you're chasing it, the one thing I think that you do have to do, you could do AA, you could go therapy, you could go personal development. There's different ways, but you got to latch on to that higher source. No matter what you call it, you're not comfortable calling it God, don't call it God. Call it the infinite intelligence. Call it the universe, whatever it is. Realize that there's something greater than yourself that's going to bring you to unlock your fullest potential. Because guess what, y'all? You ain't going to do it on your own. It ain't going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Why do you think that is that human beings that ascend to some of the highest heights have faith? Because one common denominator that I'm seeing with most of the successful people that I'm talking 99% of them believe in something greater than themselves. Their faith is their foundation. Yep. Why do you think that is, that as human beings, we need that in order to excel?
Because if the higher source is the one guiding us and opening those doors and moving those mountains, you think that higher source is going to be like, let me let you unlock your fullest potential without me, without you believing in me, without you latching onto me. That's why so many people struggle, right? I mean, we've seen it for so many years. And that's why my mission is to empower business owners and entrepreneurs from overcoming their limitations so that they can live in purpose and close the gap between spirituality and true wealth. Because there's so many people out there who make all this money, And they got the world by the balls. And then they take their lives. Elvis Presley, Michael Jackson.
Robin Williams. Anthony Bourdain.
The list goes on and on. And those are just famous people. What about the average billionaire that's out there that takes his life? Right. Why? Because they're empty inside. Something's missing. That missing component is that connection with that higher source that lets you, helps you unlock that fullest potential. You might have it at one point and then you lose it. And then everything else around you starts spiraling out of control.
Yeah. Thank you for that. We've got to believe in something bigger than ourselves. Otherwise, what's the fucking point? You're just doing it for selfish reasons, or you're chasing the things, or you're chasing the numbers, or you're chasing the cars, or you're chasing the planes, whatever it is that you're chasing. Mm-hmm. You're chasing it by yourself.
Yeah.
And when the times get hard, who are you going to lean on? It's Scarface in the hot tub. Who put this shit together? Me. That's who.
That's right.
And look what happened to Tony.
Yeah.
He went down in a ball of flames. And although it seems very sexy on screen, so many of us go down in a ball of our own self-inflicted pain, and it's not that sexy, and it's not that dramatic. So you mentioned what you're doing now. So I wanted to really hit home with the pain, because we know about your pain. How have you now turned that into purpose?
I turned it into purpose because I realized my story don't belong to me.
Who does it belong to?
It belongs to the people out there that I'm going to be able to help. The people out there that I'm going to impact their lives. You know what I mean? That's why I do what I do. You know, I came into this game making seven figures in another business. You know what I mean? This isn't something that I have to do. This is something I'm choosing to do because God's like, this is your purpose. You got to follow that. You know what I mean? And I want to make sure that other people out there are able to follow their passion, follow their purpose, and turn their pain into profit. Because it's about the three P's, right? Pain, purpose, profit. It all equates to that. If you have that pain, you allow that pain, you lean into that, you overcome that pain. Because guess what? Overcoming adversity, that shit reveals character, right? So you overcome that adversity, and then you realize, oh shit, helping people go through what I went through, overcoming what I went through, that's my new purpose. And then all of a sudden that just starts turning into profit because the doors start opening, the mountains start moving, and God starts saying, now is your time. Now is your time to shine. I believe that when I went through what I went through, I believe God took me out of like a pumpkin patch, right? Took the guts out, all the negative shit, took it out, put a shining light in me and said, here, go share it with the world now. This is your purpose. This is what you're meant to do. Go live it.
You know, you deal with business professionals, and I've been blessed enough to be around some really high-level people. And the ones that have gone through the fire and come out the other side better for it say the same thing. It was leaning into their faith, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I know plenty of people that have money and are not good people, or their life is in shambles because, you know, they're doing it at the expense of their children. They're doing it at the expense of their husband or their wife. And, you know, balances, again, you'll hear different things on the internet from different entrepreneurs. Balance is a myth, because if you want to accomplish something great, you're going to, you know, lose that balance in some other areas of your life. And to an extent, that is true. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm sure Michael Jordan's kids were not seeing him as often as, you know, Joe Schmo's kids who's working a 9-to-5. But you work specifically with professionals who are seeking out to find some kind of balance because they're missing that in their life. What are some of the tools that you use to help draw them in and help them realize that connection with God, which may seem silly? How do you help them realize that that is the most important thing? Because we know as former addicts that that is, or excuse me, as addicts in recovery, that that is. Even now, I find it hard to identify myself as that because I've eliminated that belief system. But that may not be as easy or as understandable for some people.
Right.
And there's some people that may hear this and be like, oh, that guy's going to, he's going to fall off the wagon because he doesn't, you know, just because of the way he states it. But how do you help them come to this realization that God is the most important thing in their life where they may not have seen it before?
Well, someone has to kind of realize on their own that they tried to do it so many times on their own and it didn't work. where they lost their faith and they see the difference in their life when they kind of were connected and then when they're not. Remind them of times that they weren't able to pull through. Right. And then times where they are able to pull through and what that connection looked like. People will realize it because you remember the times where you got fucked up and your life is fucked up. That ain't something you're going to forget. And you're going to realize, damn, you know what? I was spiritually bankrupt at that time.
Right.
You know, and the big thing for me, a lot of people that I work with, their misconception is the whole God thing. A lot of people have this misconception of God, right? Like you can't have God. You can't have success and a relationship with God at the same time. That's the most bullshit story I ever heard in my life. The more spiritually connected you are, the more abundance you have in your life and the more opportunities and doors start opening, right? And people don't realize that, shit, you know what? I could have this connection and have success at the same time and unlock my fullest potential, right? But spirituality isn't just about the higher power. Yeah, the most important piece is that connection with that higher source. But spirituality is also about walking and living in your purpose. So when people come to me and they're not aligned with their purpose, I show them that. Do you wake up every morning without an alarm clock? Is your purpose waking you up and saying, get your ass out of bed. It's time to go walk and live in your purpose.
Right.
Or are you waking up, wiping the coal out of your eye? Fuck, I got to do this again. Right. Miserable. That's not a way to live life. So aligning that spirituality with living in purpose is the way that I do it. And because it's important. That's what it's all connected. And once you start realizing that, that's where the aha moment goes. But there's other work that has to get done, right? We got to uncover the core values. We got to crack through the limited beliefs. That's the work right there.
Right.
That's where the real work is, right? Because I got three pillars that I deal with. I deal with perseverance, growth, and then spirituality in my coaching program. And that's where it's at, right? Because you got to learn how to overcome the adversity.
You know, we all tell ourselves a story. And we don't fucking realize that we're telling ourselves a story. And hence, limiting beliefs is what kind of woke this thought up in me. It's, what story are you telling yourself that you're repeating every day? Oh, fuck, I got to do this again.
Mm.
As opposed to, you know, I have a saying, do your goals wake you up before your alarm clock does? So I find that when I go to bed and I'm reading my goals or thinking about what's on the plate for the next day and the purpose that I have in the world now, that I'm clear on, I wake up before the alarm clock. It's almost mystical.
Mm.
Unless you're exhausted physically and just spent because your body is telling you, maybe you need to sleep in today, that happens. And I give myself that grace. But more times than not, I wake up before the alarm rings because I know, okay, I got things to accomplish in the world today. I got demons to slay. I got purpose to disperse. I mean, I got to go make it happen today.
Mm.
And that excites me. How do we help somebody uncover their purpose? Because I think that is the toughest part. People are asleep. To some extent, they are snoozing. They're going to hit that snooze button. Not only literally, but figuratively. They're going to keep putting off that thing inside of them that's telling them this is what you've been called to do. And I think more people than are willing to admit or realize it know what their purpose is, but they keep snoozing on it.
Mm.
How can we help uncover that? How does your program help uncover that through using those three pillars that you work on?
Well, man, you gotta realize that procrastinating, hitting that snooze button, procrastination is the grave that opportunity is buried in, without a doubt.
Mm.
You keep procrastinating, you're just burying your dreams. You know what I mean? You're burying your purpose. A lot of people ask me that come work with me, you know, how do you find your why? And one thing I always say is, imagine you were told you only had 1 year left to live. You know, what would you be doing? A lot of people don't want to think about death, but death forces us to focus on the truly important things in life. What do you want your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered? I mean, that's so important to realize, what do you want to be remembered for? You want to be remembered for pushing that snooze button, getting that extra 15 minutes of sleep, which does absolutely nothing? It's all in the mind? Or do you want to be up before that alarm clock and go out there and say, how am I going to conquer the day today? Wake up before the sun comes up. What am I going to do to conquer the day? What are you doing? What routine do you have in place to replace the routine that you have now, that's obviously not getting you nowhere. I used to wake up, where's my next high getting from? Where am I getting that from? I wake up today through power of prayer and meditation. And man, there's so much more power, so much more energy in that prayer and meditation. And it outweighs any day of the week waking up wondering where that next high is going to be, chasing a high that ends up having me feel in love.
So you talk about prayer and meditation. I start my day with prayer. I meditate a few times a week. Best case scenario, I can do it every day. And I have at points in my life, but it gets a little busy. And you know, I admittedly don't have that same wherewithal to do it every day now. So I've given myself the grace that 3-4 times a week. What's your routine look like in the morning? And what would you say to somebody who is going to use the story, not the excuse, the story that they're telling themselves that they don't have enough time?
Right. I love that. That's one of my favorite ones because fucking Warren Buffett got how many businesses? The guy's got the same 24 hours we got. Right. So that time is bullshit. It's an illusion. We all got the same 24 hours. But my routine in the morning hasn't changed since I gotten sober. I keep the routine, prayer and meditation. I have my moment of gratitude in the morning, things I'm thankful for. I started off with 2 minutes a day. Today, there's times where it lasts up to 45 minutes a day because I got so much to be thankful for. And then I'm taking care of my body, getting my ass to the gym. No matter how bad I don't want to go, I'm making sure I get it in. And then I start looking at my phone, looking at my calendar. I don't look at my phone until I get to the gym where I'm about to throw on the headphones and listen to some kind of music or podcast. My car ride to the gym consists of me talking with God. I'm connecting with my higher source.
And you still haven't plugged into your phone?
I still haven't plugged into my
phone.
That's huge.
And I keep hearing that as well. So that's what this podcast is about. It's about taking information, planting seeds, dropping gems. That phone automatically deviates that conversation that we have with ourselves. Because that conversation that you're having with God is also a conversation, admittedly, that you're having with yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you are a reflection of God. And your belief in God is a reflection of just that, your belief in God. So spirituality and belief is a complex thing. I never try to oversimplify it because it's not. And it means so many different things to different people. And you also mentioned your Christian faith. And admittedly, I recently, this past Sunday, stepped into a church, Christian church, non-denominational, for the first time in 18 years, bro. Mm. 18 years. And it felt like home. Because even though you've seen the climb, you've seen the progress, I still had this belief that I figured this out. I got my relationship with God. What's the pastor going to tell me? What's, you know, the people around me going to do for me that I can't do for myself because I'm so great?
Yeah.
So, you know, listen, you can have confidence and still have community. And I'm learning that. I'm a fucking work in progress. I can't wait to look at some of this stuff 4-5 years from now, let alone 4-5 months from now. Yeah. Because I welcome the idea of going to church only for my wife and my kids. Because it's a community that admittedly I don't have anymore. Because I've made so much progress, I don't have people to lean on. People have traditions. And with all the success that I've found, both in my personal life and professionally, there's still something missing. I don't have a community around me. I don't. I have friends. I have associates. I have people I really admire like you. But like when Thanksgiving comes around, that's when you know if you got community.
Yeah.
Whether it be your neighbors or your friends, whatever. And I had to admit to myself recently that my family and my kids were suffering because we didn't have that community. So I stepped into this church that my wife's friends, our daughter's friends' parents are part of. And I just said, F it. Look, even when I talk about church, I don't drop the F-bomb, huh? Yeah. But the reality is we dropped the kids downstairs and they had a school setting for them. Yeah. And bro, they came out and my daughter was like, I can't wait to come back. And I was moved to tears multiple times because they weren't shoving anything down your throat. And that's what's beautiful about these non-denominational settings. They don't shove anything down your throat. And I remember reading that Thomas Jefferson, he wrote a book called The Moral Teachings of Jesus Christ. Mm. Because I always had a hard time believing that Moses staff on the floor and parted the seas. Mm. It's not a knock on religion. It's not a knock on anything. But I just want to have an honest conversation out there. Like, I couldn't buy into that. Just like AA is amazing, but I couldn't buy into that. So for anybody thinking that they have to agree with everything that's said in any form of teaching, that's an excuse they're giving themselves. Yeah. That's an out that they're giving. Oh, well, I don't agree with that one out of the 17 things they just said. It's almost like a child, right? Yeah, listen, you did these things wrong. Oh, they're going to hold on to the one that they didn't do wrong and use that against you. So I think as adults, we do the same thing. We use any excuse to open the door to leave. Mm. And I'm just tired of giving myself outs. You know, yeah. There's a reason that so many people go to church, because it works. And I'm glad that I stepped through those doors. Do you go to church every week?
I go to church on Sundays, yeah.
And you've been doing that since getting sober?
Yeah, about a year into it.
Okay.
A year into it, I started going. I mean, yeah, there's a bunch of different stories that you could question if right. this is real, if that's real. And we all go through that, right? I'm a big believer in, I have interest in all these different religions because they all have, you know, their principles that are dope principles to go by, right? Yeah. You know, you look at the Hindu principles, you look at the Judaism principles, and you look at all the principles that they have, and there's some really dope ones that you could grab onto and bring into your life.
Right.
And one thing that they all have, they all might have different principles, different beliefs, but the one common denominator is some type of higher power.
Yeah.
Right? Some type of higher power. Most of them call it God. Some of them call it Allah. Some of them call it this, that. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But they all believe in some type of higher source.
Right.
What does that tell you? You latch onto that higher source, you're able to unlock your fullest potential. It don't matter what religion.
Right.
That shit could cause so many, it's like politics.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it could cause so many different ways of arguing and this and that. Latch on to the one thing that they all have in common, the one denominator.
Right. There's a belief in something greater than yourself.
That's it. That's it. And that's what faith is. Faith is about believing something that you can't see, you can't touch, you can't feel, but you know it's there.
Right. That is undeniable. And that was always my struggle with religion is, well, if one is right, the other ones have to be wrong.
Yeah, that's.
And that was always why I was at odds. But I put that behind me. And, you know, I don't know that this is the church that we end up staying at, but I'm just so glad that I finally took the governor off my life. Because even with all the success that I've been having, there's still ceilings I'm putting on myself.
Yeah.
And that was one of them. And I was cheating my family because my kids are going to, and anybody who has kids knows this, they're going to listen to strangers sometimes more absolutely. Than they're going to listen absolutely. To you. So, you know, if I told my daughter about Jesus Christ or the moral teachings of any religion, she'd probably be less inclined to listen.
Right.
She'd actually be watching at my behavior.
Yeah.
And I know that. But to learn it from an external source definitely is more powerful, more effective. So I'm really glad I did that. And I want to talk a little bit more about the future for you. You just became a grandfather.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I love to fuck with you yeah. about. You look great, bro, for your age.
I appreciate
grandpa.
It,
grandpapa. Abuelo.
Word,
how are they doing?
It's good, man. It's a blessing. But at the end of the day, it's a blessing. It was hard to accept in the beginning.
Right.
But God's got his way of putting things in your life that you don't understand why. Yeah. But once you learn how to accept them, he's going to show you the why. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm still trying to figure that out. But I think I see my daughter's growth. I see the way she is as a mother. And I think that it was his way of telling her it's time to grow up and take life a little more seriously and be able to realize that it's not about you anymore. Mm. You know what I mean? It's about now you got a child that you're bringing into the world, you know, because, man, my life don't belong to me, belongs to my kids, to my loved ones, to my family. You know, also, that was another thing that helped me get sober, you know?
People counting on you.
Yeah, you got people counting on you, man. And I think that God put this baby into our lives so that my daughter could get that. And I see that she's gay, and I'm proud of her for that. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had a guest on, and she shared for the first time being a mom. She was pregnant at 15, had her first kid at 16. Yeah. And she had never spoken about it before. And it was so powerful because there's so many people out there, young people, that are probably struggling for purpose. They're struggling to find out the whys. Yeah. And there's so much distractions in the form of technology and the phones and social media and the algorithm and life, mm-hmm. real human life is what is ultimately the most valuable thing that we have
yeah.
as being humans. And I think we're losing that to some extent. So it's amazing that you put it that way, where your daughter who is struggling for purpose, she's probably struggling mm-hmm. with who am I in the world? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it? Why am I here? Like so many young people do. And I'm not saying that having a child is going to solve any of that, but the way that you put it was beautiful because at the end of the day, it makes you realize that there is something greater than mm-hmm. yourself. And I think inherently we're all selfish. You know, I have a 2-year-old and he's selfish, and I have a 7-year-old and she's selfish sometimes. She's generous others, but for the most part, it's human nature to be selfish. And I think having a child relieves us to some extent of that, to some extent.
But let's tap into that for a minute, please. Right? Because I'm a big believer in order to be selfless, you got to be selfish first. You got to learn to be able to put yourself first for certain things, right? I'm not saying be selfish and, oh, it's mine, everything's mine. Right. No. But learn to be selfish in order to be selfless. Because if you don't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of anybody else? If you don't have me time, how are you going to make time for everybody else? Amen. Where you're able to be present, right? Because you got to take that time and take for yourself, right? And that's another limited belief that has to get cracked through, right? The whole selfish thing.
Right.
Right. Is you can't be selfish. You can't be selfish. We're taught that from childhood. And then what happens? You don't learn to take time for yourself. You say yes to everybody for everything and you become a people pleaser. That ain't the way to live life. You got to learn to say no. Right. Saying no is a powerful source. Right. Because especially now during the holiday season, everybody's worrying about, oh, let me make it here. Let me make it there. And trying to spread yourself out thin. What are you doing to take care of yourself? Are you taking that me time out? Are you putting yourself first? Are you able to say no to other people so that you could be at peace? And don't say yes to things that don't serve you. If they don't serve you, why the fuck are you saying yes?
Right.
You know what I mean? Learn to say no. It's okay to put yourself first for certain things. Because in order to do anything, in order to have anything where you're taking care of anybody, you got to be able to take care of yourself. And I learned that through sobriety, man, because if I didn't put myself first and my sobriety first, I would have never been able to take care of my kids. I would have never been able to provide for them.
Right. It's a good kind of selfishness that you're talking
about. Yeah.
And the journey of self-discovery requires that we look inward. And in order to look inward, we need to get away from others, in particular those who would demand from us or need from us, right? So I'm not saying it's a bad distraction, but I'm saying the reason that I wake up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning is because, and my wife asks me all the time, well, why do you wake up so early? I'm like, do you see what goes on the minute these kids wake up? It's not our day anymore. Mm. And I've seen the frustration in her life because she's trying to get the extra sleep because she needs it as a mom. But that extra half an hour and that cup of coffee and time to reflect would make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that would make a difference in everybody's life. And we talked about snoozing. And when you keep hitting that snooze button until the absolute minute that you have to fucking perform, that you got no other option but then to get ready for work or whatever it is that you're avoiding, you've given yourself none of that time. Mm-hmm. So give yourself some cushion in the morning. Don't turn on the phone. Have that cup of coffee by the window, turn on some music, read a book, stay away from technology, stay away from the TV, pray, have that discussion with your higher power. And if you haven't established that well enough, have that discussion with yourself. Mm. And it'll open up the doors to a new, better you. So I appreciate you deviating to that because it's such a beautiful way to end this conversation. Yeah. Joe, tell our audience, where can they find you? Tell us a little bit more about your coaching program and anybody that thinks that they can benefit from that. How can they find you? And I want you to speak some life into our audience. Just give them a couple of things that they can do after they listen to this podcast that they can help improve their relationship with their higher power and in their lives in general.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So you can find me at withjoerivera.com is the website. All the socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube is With Joe Rivera. My coaching program is a 12-week coaching program. And I help people go through overcome perseverance. We go through the growth sector and the spirituality sector. It's a 12-week program. I have group coaching, individual coaching. Go to the website, schedule a call. It's free. And we got that discovery call. And man, as far as being able to connect with the higher source, take time out in the day, man. Every morning, start your day off with, if you don't want your knees to hit the floor, I mean, you don't have to go that route. Go the route of just starting up a conversation. It's not about a foxhole prayer. It's not about saying 7 Our Fathers, 4 Hail Marys, and you're forgiven. That shit is that's not what he wants. Your higher source wants you to connect with him. He wants it to be where you're his father. He's your father, your brother, your mother, your uncle, your best friend, your everything. And when you start putting that spirituality first, oh, shit, man. The doors open. The mountains move. It just becomes obvious. But it starts by a couple of minutes a day. And then you just go throughout your day. I mean, dude, there's times where I'm sitting in my car, middle of the day. Thank God for Bluetooth because people would think I'm talking to myself because I'm sitting there having a conversation, full-blown conversation, you know? And sometimes I'm questioning.
Look over the light.
Yeah.
What the fuck is this guy talking about? Like, years ago.
Yeah.
Now, like,
yeah, right, he's on the phone. Right. So just start with just, that's it, man. Like an everyday conversation, like you would with your friend, like you would with your brother, like you would with your father, because that's what your higher source wants. He wants you to connect with him on all those different avenues to know that you do realize that you need him that much. So I would start with just a couple minutes a day and then just let it grow from there. Keep growing. And that's the way I would suggest building that relationship with a higher source. And man, and just be grateful. Be grateful that that higher source gives you life, that breathes into your lungs every day, so that you could wake up and go create your own destiny.
Amen to that, my brother. I appreciate you coming out. I appreciate the 2.0 version of this podcast. Can't wait till we cut it up and release it. I'm going to put all the bio details in the notes. You can feel free to check Joe out. Check out Joe's coaching program. I know him to be a stand-up guy. Everything you heard today is everything he's about. Thank you, as always, for tuning in to the Real Mentors podcast, and let's get it.